We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you build or deepen your meditation practice, and Meditation Studio, the five-star app. I'm Patricia Karpis. If you haven't checked out the hundreds of free Meditation Studio app guided meditations, go to choosemuse.com/meditationstudio. It's a great way to chill as the winter rolls in. Today's encore episode is with Martha Beck, a PhD, Harvard-trained sociologist, world-renowned coach, and New York Times bestselling author. She's also known as Oprah's life coach. Her most recent book, The Way of Integrity, Finding Your Path to Your True Self, is an Oprah Book Club selection and a New York Times bestseller. In The Way of Integrity, which we discussed today, she presents a process that anyone can use to find a sense of purpose, emotional healing, and a way to be free of mental suffering. Much of what plagues us, negative habits and patterns, too much people-pleasing, staying in stale relationships or careers, happen because we're out of touch with our true nature. This signals a split from integrity, which very often is unconscious and fueled by cultural norms and traditions that lead us in directions that aren't, in fact, right for us. Getting back in sync with what's true for us brings us into alignment, and this is where we become our best selves. Meditation has been a huge part of her own process in bringing her life into integrity. Now, here's Martha. Martha, it is a pleasure and an honor to have you on Untangle today. Thank you for being here.
The honor is all mine, and hello out there to all you wonderful listeners.
Yay. You have such a rich body of work. I think 10 books. Is it 9 or 10 books?
I don't remember.
Okay. 9 or 10 books. And you've got blogs and courses and such rich contributions to our well-being and personal growth. And I want to help our audience understand what originally inspired you to do this work, to contribute what you have been contributing for so many years now.
I was just one of those people who was desperate to be happy and couldn't find it from childhood on because of some childhood trauma. I was just really looking for a way to feel better. I remember going to a play where one of the characters yelled, "Teach me how to be happy." And I was like looking around the audience thinking, if somebody talks back, I'm going to go to them. I need to learn to be happy. And so I set out trying. And if you're that obsessed with something, you do come up with some processes and hacks. And eventually I got to be a very happy person. And I wanted to spread that around.
That's so lovely. I know you had some early childhood trauma. And would you say that you dealt with a lot of depression and anxiety as a maybe 10-year-old or 15-year-old? Were you struggling a lot? And if yes, how did your life in the Mormon church influence this?
By the time I was 10, I was good and depressed. I remember people find this shocking to talk about. Maybe it's a trigger warning. I remember being 6 years old and eating a bowl of cereal and trying to figure out how to kill myself.
Oh, no.
So I was a very depressed, anxious kid. And certainly, I think Mormonism played into that. It was a very strange background. People that I know now who are also American don't really realize what it was like to grow up in the heart of Mormonism in the 60s. It was kind of a throwback society where women were definitely considered second-class citizens. At one point, I wrote that the Mormons, the only thing they ask of women is to breed well in captivity.
Oh my gosh.
This is a little bitter. I'm sorry. I'm not bitter anymore. It was hard because I was being presented with a worldview that actually didn't match what I felt inside at all. And it's very confusing to be a kid in that circumstance.
Very confusing indeed. And that is exactly what you talk about in the way of integrity, how out of sync we often are with our inner and our outer selves. And I also think that ties in with your book, Finding Your Own North Star. Do you see these as working really well together? And then I'll ask you a couple of questions about The Way of Integrity, since that's your newer book.
Finding Your Own North Star was about, interestingly enough, since I wrote that, I used North Star as a metaphor for the life you were meant to live. I started to find mine because I was really physically ill. By the time I was 18, I had chronic, severe pain all over my body that wasn't diagnosed for about 12 years. So I was in almost constant pain for 12 years. But when I would do certain things, the pain would grow less. And I started moving toward those things. And sometimes the pain would be more. And I started moving away from those things. And through that process of following my body, I call it the body compass now, because it was always turning toward true north. It was always turning toward the life I was meant to live. And I believe that's true for everybody, that we all have inner compasses of various kinds that are pulling us toward our personal true north. And that was the object of that book. I wrote that 20 years ago. And now I realize, in the interim, I've realized that when you get really focused on heading due north, no matter what, like not taking any detours, not moving to the left or the right, to be completely and purely yourself on the course of your true life is, I call it integrity, because integrity just means one thing intact. It doesn't mean being virtuous. It's just you are finally whole and intact. And at that point, life becomes astonishing and wonderful and magical and amazing. So I wanted to share that too.
Yeah. I love this way that you described integrity. The unity of intention, fascination, and purpose is what it's like to live in full integrity. And when we're not in integrity, we do lose focus and clarity. And often that split from integrity is unconscious. And you talk a lot about our cultural norms and traditions hurting us in some ways, because they make it so difficult to really be truthful and authentic about what it is that we want to do and how we want to live our lives. So if cultural norms are pushing us in the direction of dictating what we're supposed to do, how do we shake that off? How do we move away from that?
Great question. First of all, integrity, like the way we lose our integrity, it's not about, as you said, it's not about deliberate lying. It's about being born with a certain personality, a certain set of preferences, and then ending up in social situations, whether it's with our family, our ethnicity, our religion, or whatever, where that particular culture or subculture wants you to behave in ways that are different from your natural self. So nature and culture are two ends of the spectrum there. And typically before we're even talking, when we're born whole, And before we can even talk, we are being pressured to act calmer than we really feel, or sweeter, or tougher, or whatever it is. And 99 times out of 100, we will sell out our nature and go with the culture. And so that splits us. And as you said, we don't even know it's happened. But the saving grace is that your natural self will always, if part of you is going away from it and splitting yourself in two, it will cause unhappiness. It will cause suffering. And this is why I wanted to kill myself when I was six. I was already so far from being who I really was in my essence that life had come to feel very difficult. It's like a heavy burden instead of a joy. And that happens to so many people. And nobody articulates for them this split between what they're naturally meant to be and what they are culturally forced to be.
But most people, when they come to you or when they read your books, they're in their 20s, 30s, and beyond. How hard is it to move beyond that split after part of a lifetime of living in a way that's incongruent with who you really are?
I don't know, really. I think it depends on the intensity of the suffering. The more different your nature is from your culture, the more you suffer. For example, I'm gay, but I was not one of those people who grew up being attracted to women. In fact, my first crush was on a boy, so it never occurred to me that I might be gay. And as you go forward, if you're that split, if you're betraying something really essential for you, then the suffering is really intense. Say you're a straight person and you're in an imperfect marriage, you can go on a long time without huge pain. I was in a marriage where both my husband and I were unawares, but gay. And so even though we loved each other, we just both felt like there was something missing in our lives. There was something wrong. So if your nature goes away from your culture pretty dramatically, it's a really intense level of pain. And what that tends to do is make you come to the reckoning earlier. So I've worked with people who've been gliding along for 60 years and now suddenly it's too much, because they really are not that far from themselves until that age. But then I've worked with young people who were ready to leave their duplicity and come into integrity because they had been pulled so far from their true selves.
Yeah, I like what you said about the intensity of suffering, because I think a lot of people do feel lost. And you said this in the book, that many of us are clueless about our own inner lives. And so we may not even know cognitively that we're lost, or even be able to articulate what's wrong. And so then what happens? Do you need to suffer to a certain extent? And almost, this is why in Buddhist tradition, the suffering is always a path to something wonderful. And is that what you feel like? We find our soul teacher, we find our inner teacher through this journey.
Yeah, the scattered parts of ourselves are all over the place and we have to go collect them to become whole. And that's why I used Dante's Divine Comedy as an outline for this book. And it starts out in the middle of my life, I found myself in a dark wood and I was lost and miserable and the right road had been lost. And he has no idea how he got there or how to do better. And he needs a teacher. So he gets a teacher in the form of a ghost of the poet Virgil. And Virgil explains to him that he has to go down through the Inferno, the famous Inferno, which I take to be an inward journey through the archaeology of the self, where you go down, down,
yeah,
you meet your demons. You try to figure out why they're suffering, and the objective is to set them free. And if you keep going all the way through the center of the earth, as Dante does, then what was down becomes up. And if you've ever had therapy or whatever, this is the process. But you come back to wholeness with a legacy of wisdom from the suffering you got by being split. Every beautiful experience that you want to have inwardly, you get only in the raw materials, and the raw materials are always the opposite of what you want. So if you want courage, you get a life with a lot of fear. If you want joy, you get a massive depression, because it's finding our way down through those various hells that makes us really master the skills of being brave or being joyful or taking that raw material of a life experience of suffering and turning it into this gold that is its opposite.
You talk about unchaining yourself from the inferno and use the language we use a lot here, releasing your negative thoughts. Do you need a guide or a teacher for that part of this journey, or what is actually happening there in your story?
I think you do need some clues. Most of my teachers, soul teachers in my life, have been books. And in fact, Dante gets the poet Virgil, but that's because Dante had read Virgil's work. So you don't have to have a Mary Poppins come down the chimney or knock at the door to find a soul teacher. You can find it on a bookshelf, or it could be a friend, or it could be a pet. It could be almost anything. Once you're openly looking for the way home, different things will show up to guide you. And that, yes, you will end up looking at all your inner demons and unchaining from them. The one thing I wanted to say in addition about finding a teacher is that all good soul teachers will remind you that the primary soul teacher of your life is your true self. It's always the finger that points to the moon is not the moon. Happiness is something that is inherent in you and you find your way to it.
And what are some of the obstacles we face as we move in that direction towards happiness and the direction towards courage and, of course, full integrity? What stops us from that process or from that goal?
It's the social surroundings and our internalization of those social norms. So I just was answering a text from a client who said, I just can't get out of bed and be productive. And they were fighting and fighting and fighting to be productive in our culture's definition of that word. And they'd just been on a huge trip and everything. So nature said, you're tired, lie down. But the internalized culture says, don't be tired, get up and be productive. And there's a good chance that if she stays in bed and tries to rest, the people around her will say, what's wrong with you? Get up, get moving. That's our culture. Not a lot of space for rest in it. So you get tremendous pushback when you start to break the rules of your socialization, because you're probably still surrounded by the very people who socialized you. So they're not going to like it when you drop their ways and go to your own true nature.
Yeah, that's a huge obstacle. And it does seem like once the willingness is there, then it's like a step-by-step change. But you also talk in the book about why success is a problem. That's what you were just talking about, these notions of success that we have. So we can't follow how we actually feel.
Yeah, I mean, there's this beautiful metaphor in the Divine Comedy. He's lost. This is before he goes into the inferno. He's lost in the dark wood. He doesn't know where he's going, but he sees this beautiful, shiny mountain. Mount Delectable, and all these people are trying to climb it, and it looks all shiny, and he tries and tries to get up there. And I believe that was Dante's metaphor for the success as defined by the culture, wealth, money, power. And as he tries and tries to climb it, he keeps getting attacked by wild animals, which he describes in emotional terms. So there's a lion that makes him terrified. There's a leopard that is just ravenous and can never get enough. There's a wolf that is so sad. It makes everyone go into depression when they see her. So he's basically saying we try to climb the pyramid of success in our culture, but these moods come up that frighten us, that appall us, that make us feel like there's never enough. So he's saying that's not the way. And it's by falling back down that mountain, not being successful, that he finally meets his teacher and ends up going all the way through the inferno and onto paradise.
Interesting. There was something about bad moods and good moods and the productivity of bad moods or the message from the bad moods. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly right. When people come to see me, they're usually afflicted by one or more of six different things. And the first one is the loss of a sense of purpose, which you wouldn't think would be excruciating, but it is. It's the number one reason. After that come negative moods, negative emotional states. And that is the deep psyche trying to say, stay away from the wrong life, go toward the right life. So bad moods, they feel bad, but they're actually teachers helping you. Then they can develop into physical suffering. So that's the third thing. Then problems in relationships begin to develop, problems with career, and finally, sometimes addiction. Those six things are what I call dark wood of error syndrome. And if you're having the dark moods, instead of trying to fix the mood, maybe change the direction you're going. So when you get a bad mood, what we tend to do is try to medicate it, jolly ourselves up, think about something else. But what I think is truer for us is to ask ourselves, the part of us that's in the dark mood, where could I go that would lighten my spirit? Where could I go that would be happy? And you can always find one. And the biggest problem, I will tell you, Patricia, the biggest problem I have with coaching is that people don't understand that the primary way you need to deal with a bad mood is by resting. Resting is not a thing in our culture. So I get people who are just haggard and miserable, and they're like, nothing makes me happy anymore. And I'm like, how about you just lie down and watch TV for about 3 days? And they're like, no, I could never.
What if somebody finds you?
Exactly. And they're horrified by the suggestion because it's culturally inappropriate. But the fact is, they're not well at that moment. And usually they're exhausted. And if they don't rest, then they'll get sick. And then they will be forced to rest. So my whole self motto when I start to feel bad is cave early. Like the moment you feel bad, go take care of yourself in the most relaxed, the most gentle, the most generous way you can. Because if you don't do that, I ended up with 12 years of chronic pain and I just don't want to go back there.
That's really horrible. And there was no diagnosis for your pain?
There were several diagnosed but poorly understood autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. And some of them were like eroding various organs. Like they were able to see that it was a real thing. But when I started following my own internal compasses, when I started listening to my inner teacher and the teachers that I found in books and a good therapist, they all went away. All the symptoms of these incurable conditions.
That's amazing. Well, you talk about inner truth telling, which makes you a kind of an archaeologist. And will you talk about that inner truth telling versus the lies that we tell ourselves, but maybe aren't even aware that we're lying to ourselves?
Yeah. So one thing I used to do when I spoke to large crowds, when that was a thing back before COVID, I'd be in an auditorium or a big hotel ballroom full of people, and I would stop right in the middle of a speech on a completely different topic and say, is everyone comfortable? And they'd be like, what? I'd say, is everyone comfortable? Are you all comfortable? And they would say, yeah. And I'd be like, no, seriously, tell me if you're even slightly uncomfortable. And nobody would raise a hand. And then I'd say, okay, if you're home in your house alone right now, how many of you would be sitting in exactly the position you're in at this moment? None of them would raise their hands. And I'd say, well, why wouldn't you? And they would think and think and think. And then finally, someone would figure out they weren't particularly comfortable. And that's not a tragedy. It was mild. But the problem is that they really believed that they were comfortable and that I would believe they were comfortable if we all just agreed to it. And that's culture. We all agree to think that it's comfortable to behave in certain ways. And so we go blind and deaf and numb to the signals coming from our own bodies. Those people would look me in the eye, and it never failed. They would look me in the eye in clear daylight and just lie and lie, and they didn't know they were lying. So when you start to go through your inferno, the first question is, where am I not comfortable? Where am I suffering? And instead of pretending or happy washing the whole thing, you just acknowledge, yeah, this is uncomfortable. I can stay here. I can tolerate this, but I'm clear on what I'm feeling. And that is the first step toward integrity.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping
available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now over to untangle. And that's the truth telling. You have to ask yourself those questions. And what happened during you have a now, I think, famous year of not lying? And I guess this is because we all lie a little bit or a lot all the time. And sometimes it's unconscious, as you're saying. What happened when you started this year of not lying?
Yeah, I was so tired of being in pain and exhausted. Right. I had insomnia. I was miserable. During my doctoral program at Harvard, I had a baby with Down syndrome, and I moved back to Utah to finish my dissertation because I knew people there would approve of him at Harvard.
Yeah.
So there I was. I was hung up between Harvard culture and Mormon culture, and I was working and trying to continue school, and I was sick all the time. I was so miserable. I was ready to do anything to stop the suffering. And they said, the truth will set you free. And so I was like, okay.
I'll do that.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. And I mean it. I'm not going to tell a single lie. And I'm going to notice when I'm doing things that don't feel right. I'm going to say it right out loud. I'm going to tell the truth with my words and with my actions. And during that year.
Sorry, I'm anticipating this.
Okay. Now I want people to know this will not happen to you. You're not as far out of integrity as I was, and you don't need to be this extreme. In the book, I really recommend you do this gradually and softly and gently, but I did not. I went straight into it and ended up either losing or walking away from my family of origin, my religion, and that included all the relationships I'd had before the age of like 17 when I left Utah. So all my friendships, all my family relationships, realized I didn't like my job, quit my industry, academia, realized I was gay. So there went the marriage, left my home, left pretty much everything that had made me feel like me, except my kids. And yet, and I'm telling you, loss is painful. Everybody knows that. I grieved and grieved and grieved. And at the same time, at a bedrock level, I was coming home.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? You felt that in your body.
Oh, yeah. And my body started to heal, which was so confusing in the middle of these terrible things. Here was my body feeling better than it had when everything looked perfect. So it was very counterintuitive, but it worked.
Wow. So it's hard to change habits. And one of the things that you say in the book is that a lot of the people that you're coaching understand change. They want to change, but they actually refuse to do it. I actually know some people like this where they're talking about doing this or that all the time, but never do it. So it's hard to change.
Oh, yeah, it's very hard. And I studied my whole life coaching program, and what I teach other coaches is about handling change because our psyches
don't want to do it.
Yeah, they evolved to resist change. And yet, change is the eternal and absolutely continuous reality of our lives. Things are always changing. So being able to adapt to change means that you're being honest about how you're feeling and honest about what you need to do. And then going that way, I heard a yogi say once, I exist in continuous creative response to whatever is present. And that's the life of integrity. But as I said, it goes against cultural norms, not just sometimes, but pretty much always. So Dante has Virgil, his therapist, together they go through the inferno, like maybe somebody out there did with their therapist. And when they're clear on the truth and what's bothering them, then they have to climb a mountain, or Dante has to climb a mountain called purgatory, where you purge yourself of the things you've done out of innocent error. People don't realize 2/3 of Dante's Inferno is full of people who don't even know why they're there. It was an accident. I'm sorry, I made mistakes. I didn't even know they were mistakes. So you get out of that. You have to climb a mountain so that you can repattern all those old beliefs that were leading you into suffering and guiding your actions. And what Dante says is that there are all these people walking around and around and around the base of the mountain. Because to climb it means to change significantly. And to change significantly is frightening from within and often negatively reinforced from outside. So it's really hard, especially at the beginning. But your alternative is to just stagnate in a sense of vague suffering.
Yeah, you do say it's hardest to climb in the beginning, but it gets easier as we go.
Yeah, there's a whole theory called the trans-theoretical model of change, where they looked at all these different psychological systems and found how change occurs. And there is a series of steps. And the first one is pre-contemplation. You don't even know that you're going to change. Then there's contemplation when you're like, oh man, my marriage really sucks, or I hate my job. Well, I got to change something, but I'm terrified to do it. So you contemplate it. And then you start to feel more acutely the sense that, oh, this needs to happen. And that's when you start to act. And again, as you said in my book, I recommend 1 degree changes. So if you get a plane and it's out of structural integrity, it can't even fly. Once you get it back to structural integrity, which simply means all the pieces are aligned correctly, there's no moral judgment here, the plane can fly. But you also need to know how to steer it. If you are on a plane that's going 1,000 miles and every 10 minutes or so you turn it north by 1 degree, you won't even really notice that you're turning, but at the end of the journey, you'll be in a completely different place. Those little nudges, I really recommend that people just write down their list of things to do and then feel, as they look at each item on the list, does that feel freeing and liberating and joyful, or does it feel stultifying and toxic? If it's right for you, it might be scary, but it won't feel toxic and suffocating. So go away from that. Just change your path by 1 degree, a little less of the thing that feels toxic, a little more of the thing that feels joyful, and then do it again the next day. And ultimately, your list of things to do is going to look very, very different.
You reference a psychologist friend that says, quote, know what you really know, feel what you really feel, say what you really mean, and do what you really want. And I thought that was a really nice, simple way to express being in alignment and integrity.
When you get to do what you really want, people freak out. I hold that line.
Martha, how has meditation transformed you? What's been your process? What's your practice? Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's been incredibly life-changing for me. And I started, you know, I read about mindfulness when it first became a thing 20 years ago. And they would always say at least 15 minutes. So I would meditate 20 minutes a day. And it was helpful. It was centering. And then at a certain point in my life, I just became ravenous for meditation. Like, it was all I wanted to do. It was like, talk about inner compasses, like always telling us what to do next. So I started meditating for longer periods, usually at least an hour, sometimes two at a time. I didn't do marathons like some people do, but a few hours.
That's a pretty big sit.
Yeah, I've known people who've sat for 100 days with only 4 hours of sleep a day. So I'm not that. But those long hours, long meditations, first all my stuff came up really dramatically and I would just sit and watch it. And then everything started to clear and everything became so spacious inside my mind and so much less pressure on my body. And I started to feel connected to everything, not as a concept, but as an absolute felt experience. And then I couldn't choose things out of integrity as easily as I had before. It was like trying to swallow a butter knife or something. It's like that. No, I can't. I simply cannot. So I got more and more aligned. And that's when I started thinking, wow, could I live my whole life in total integrity? And I set out to do that. It was the basis for the book. And I have to say, I only did it to feel whole. But what happened was that my life filled up with miracles. And all I was doing was trying to stay in integrity. And all the things I'd ever wanted in my life seemed to be flying toward me, to the point where I thought, every time I've asked for anything ever in my life, and I believe this is true for everybody, the answer from the universe has always been, oh, yes, right away. And the gift, whatever it was, is immediately granted. But it's always sent to our real home address, which is peace. The truest phrase that I've tested this with hundreds of people, the thing that makes them feel like they're aligned more than any other phrase is, I am meant to live in peace. So if everybody out there just repeat that a few times, you get this calming sense in the body and this settled, not just because it sounds good, but because it's the truth. And when you start going toward peace, which is your real home, I am meant to live in peace, that's when all your stuff gets to you.
In some of your blogs, you talk about manifesting. And I like the way you said intention, attention, no tension. And you talk about conjuring magic. I wonder if that's a little bit the same. And if you're working on these inside of your meditation, or how do you do this?
The most important thing is to, what you just said, feel what you really feel, think what you really think, say what you really mean, and do what you really want. If you try to manifest something by meditating on it or by putting up a vision board or whatever, and you aren't in integrity, it won't come from your true self. So all I got to in meditation was the dropping away of everything that was not really me. And one of the quick ways you can know what you have the power to manifest, I know it sounds so hokey, but just make a list of things you want. I'm very into making lists. You make a list of things you want. And if I ask people that, they start writing down, I want a nicer car, I want a relationship, I want a whatever. Get that list and then make another one. And on this one, imagine that you have insomnia. You wake up in the middle of the night, you can't sleep, and it's dark and nobody's there. What do you yearn for at that moment? And I don't know if you've been playing along, but most people find they want a nicer car, but what they yearn for is peace, freedom, belonging, just a short list of feeling states. You can manifest anything from inside the truth. Manifest what you yearn for. What you want is like, meh, maybe.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And the more honest you are, just for the sake of honesty and good health, the more the miracles occur. You don't work them. Your job is to be whole. The miracles are just a byproduct. I believe in science, but I also believe science doesn't know everything yet. There's a whole lot of things. So there is no, Arthur C. Clarke said, no sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So when you learn to operate the levers of your own mind, simply a sophisticated way of using the tools that are your nervous system, and it's indistinguishable from magic to people who don't understand how the whole thing works. And we mainly don't understand how anything works.
You say that science doesn't know everything yet. I mean, it is so true. And I feel like people throw words like science and data around as if everything ever thought or in the future has already been solved by science.
Isn't that hilarious hubris? In 1888, the patent officer of the United States told the president that the patent office should be closed because everything that could be invented had already been invented. That's how we feel about science. Yes, we understand everything now. It's all an open book. We don't even understand what life is. We don't even understand what consciousness is. Stuff we experience every day. We have no idea what that is from the perspective of our current science.
Absolutely. You have a course. I feel like this is really relevant right now. You have a short course that you call Wild New World, Creating Your Perfect Life in Troubled Times. And you, even as we're having this conversation, you know, there are so many difficult, tragic, terrifying things that are happening in the world. Sometimes it feels a bit like a luxury to find your purpose or to live in integrity. These seem like wonderful things, but are there other things that we should be doing to help people or to change the world, or do those somehow go together? What do you mean when you say creating your perfect life in troubled times? And how do you think about that, like being in sync with our inner world and our bigger outer world?
Well, the world is certainly a mess. If you doubt me, just
read the news.
Read your news for 5 minutes. You'll see. And the thing is, it's impossible for us to create around us what we have not experienced within us. If I said, boy, everybody in the world needs to learn calculus, go teach calculus, and you had never learned calculus, you would not know how to do it. And the same thing is true with creating states of peace and benevolence and abundance and joy. If you have not worked it out in yourself, you cannot project it to the world or teach others to go there. And you don't have to be fully enlightened or anything. You just have to be a few steps ahead and always working toward your own experience of wholeness and happiness. And in my book, I talk about fractals, different phenomena in nature that replicate themselves, but at different sizes. So like a little triangle could fit into a much bigger triangle. It's the same shape, but a different size. And I think each of us is like a small fractal of the world. And when we heal deeply within ourselves, when we come into wholeness, integrity, and respect for nature, our nature, human nature, and nature, capital N, then we become a force that can heal other people's natures, the nature of human life on the planet, nature itself, so we don't all cook. The quest for personal integrity is literally, I believe, a moral imperative and first step for anyone who wants to be part of the healing of other beings and the planet. Without it, I mean, it is literally the first step. You have to do it inside, and then you can fractal it outside.
Okay, that makes so much sense. Are the four technologies of magic a part of that course, or is that something that's separate?
No, they're in that course, and they come from a period of my own life where I was researching medicine people.
Oh, interesting.
And now my coach training is called Wayfinder Life Coach Training, and it's the word wayfinder is something an anthropologist used to describe the medicine people, the wise ones of the Polynesian cultures, because they can find their way through any ocean. And I went around looking for ancient traditions that where the holy people of any given culture had practiced a way of progressing, like meditation is something that is a universal tool that allows people to get healthier. And I found that holy people in every culture had these four practices that they would do in order, the same order in every culture.
Oh,
yeah. And I'm not going to leave everybody hanging here. The first thing, they go into a state that I call wordlessness because it's nonverbal. And it's actually just activating the right side of the brain. On the right side of the brain is the mechanism that dissolves sense of self and makes us feel continuous with the whole universe, which is love. So wordlessness, there are different ways to get into it. And it leads directly to the second one, which is an experience of oneness, of being one with all things and all people, or love, a very, very intense ultimate love. Then there's imagination, which is where the human can picture something that has never been. And this is not something other animals can do. If you're in that wordless space where you feel connected and you begin to imagine things, that's where you're in total integrity. And what you imagine is given to you by this benevolent flow of the universe. And then you're guided to the final step, which is forming something, a relationship, an institution, a job, an object, anything that makes the world a better place. And if you use these four techniques in order, you do get a lot of really cool, magical looking things going on in your life.
Love to learn more about that. You define on your website that Wayfinder is someone who feels compelled to find their way through the chaotic and ever-changing landscape of today's world.
Yeah. The Wayfinders of Polynesia, I always wondered, how did they find Hawaii? It's surrounded by 3,000 miles of open water. Did they just go out on boats and die by the thousands until somebody stumbled on Hawaii? And no, the people setting out from the Indonesian archipelago were such incredibly sophisticated observers and part of the nature of the ocean that they could predict the existence of islands 3,000 miles away by the way the water broke against the hulls of their canoes. So they were able to navigate by the stars, navigate by the waves, navigate by observing animals. And even on stormy seas, they could find the way. And right now, all of us are living in stormy seas. And there are all kinds of unanticipated, unprecedented things and very scary things. So there's a lot going on, and we have to access that wayfinder within, just chart a course to safety and actually enjoy the trip.
Will you talk a little bit about your podcast, which is called Bewildered?
It's my favorite new thing I'm doing. I do it with my partner, Rowan Mangan, and she and I spent years sitting around going, okay, what is the culture telling us to do? And where is our nature in opposition to what we're being taught by the culture? So it basically takes what I wrote about in The Way of Integrity, and we talk about different ways that we can get back into wholeness, but we talk about it in the way we always do through conversation, which is a lot of joking and storytelling and just enjoying being together, which is how we feel about the people who listen. Like, come join us for this fun conversation that just may help you get back to your integrity. And the word bewildered is a pun because it's be wildered. So to go away from culture and toward your true nature is to be wilder. And our whole goal is to help people be wilder.
I like that. I think a lot of our listeners will want to tune into that. It's right up our alley. You also say that you've written mostly to save yourself versus to sell yourself. And what's so lovely about all of your books is that it so authentically reflects your life and everything that you've learned from each part of your journey. So I think that's amazing.
Thank you. And every life journey is a fascinating story with all the information you need to be whole. We're all on the hero's quest here, and it's not supposed to be easy, but it can be incredibly exhilarating and delightful, even though it's hard.
It is hard. Yes, it's a hard journey, but it's a very joyful one as well. Martha, thank you so much. I think we could go on, and I just really enjoyed having you so much today.
I've so enjoyed talking with you and all your good folks out there. So you can do this, people.
We can. We can do it. Thank you so much.
Save the world.
Thanks for joining today. You can find Martha's books at all major booksellers. She's published 9 nonfiction books, 1 novel, and more than 200 magazine articles. And you can learn more about her courses at marthabeck.com. Check out the Meditation Studio app, free meditations, at choosemuse.com/meditationstudio. And as always, if you have questions or suggestions, send us an email at untangle@choosemuse.com. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.